Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
All the spending, all the regulating, turning off the oil and gas spigots, all these things that chickens have come home to roost.
The Mark Reardon Show.
You can lead a man to the presidency, but you can't make him think.
He'll be gotten gains. Of Putin's kleptocracy.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm a bit disadvantaged because I do not have, there's like very few things that I need for my job, right, Sue? You know this. What do I need? I
just
need to blab my mouth. Yes. I need my lips flapping, right? And then I need my headphones, and I don't have my headphones. That's very rare. I don't often walk into the studio with no headphones, but I'm going to blame Ethan somehow. Some way.
Listen, it's because you were helping me because I forgot my readers.
It's always back on me.
I'm glad that you took responsibility for that, Sue. You know, in a roundabout way, you are responsible.
Yep. It's my fault.
Here we go on a Monday afternoon, and I have some audio to play for you here. And by the way, this is not from my house because I have a five-month-old infant in my house, as you know, that is visiting from Houston. But this is collectively the rest of the NFL fans all across the country since the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl again. Wow, wow, wow. The refs did this, blah, blah, blah. I'm so sick and tired of it. Here's an idea. How about score some more points? And don't screw up. There were some offensive decisions on the part of the Bills that I think were somewhat questionable. And yeah, you know, were there a couple calls that did not go the Bills' way? Yeah, and I would say in the opposite direction.
Yes.
And this whole conspiracy that, you know, the refs are out for the Chiefs, anything could have happened in that game. Now, the first game was kind of a blowout. I couldn't believe that. I guess, Ethan, maybe we should have recognized that, you know, Cinderella stories do kind of come to an end. And this whole notion that Jalen Hurts wasn't going to be able to play because of his knee brace, oh my gosh, that was inaccurate. So the Redskins Commanders get blown out yesterday in Philadelphia.
I think they could have cut off Jalen Hurts' right leg, and he still would have been okay to hobble enough to give the ball to Saquon Barkley, because that is all that it took for them
Saquon.
To just dominate. He was unbelievable. I mean, the first play of scrimmage that they have the ball, after a 11-minute drive from the Commanders to go down and
touchdown.
Take the lead,
right.
First play, what, a 60-yard touchdown?
Did
it was unbelievable.
Was that the first game?
Yeah.
I did not care about the first game. I do not like the Eagles. I didn't want to see
But to his point, it was like literally it looked really good for Washington. They come down, they kill how much clock? 11
like
plays.
10 minutes.
They don't get a touchdown. They got a field goal, right? And then the first play from scrimmage, Saquon Barkley goes for a touchdown like 60-something yards. It was insane.
Wow.
And that guy is incredible.
He's
Eagles
the real deal.
Certainly earned a trip to the Super Bowl, and I think the Commanders have a very strong future. On the topic of the Chiefs.
Again, going to a knee. You can doubt the Chiefs. You can dislike the Chiefs. You can disrespect the Chiefs. You're going to have to deal with the Chiefs being the first team in National Football League history to win back-to-back Super Bowls and go to the Super Bowl for a chance for a three-peat.
Oh, Mitchell, this is great. And look, yeah, it is. It's history here. And I do understand this. And I think maybe the best comparison for me in my world would be the Kansas Jayhawks. I hate Kansas. Why do we hate Kansas? Rival of Mizzou. They always win. They always have a great program. We felt that way about, even if you liked Tom Brady to begin with and you like the Patriots, after a while, collectively,
just
you're
gets
like,
old.
Okay, let's do something else. So I do completely understand the psychology of not wanting the Chiefs there because you want something different. You're kind of sick of the whole T-Swifty thing. But look, they, you know, it's hard to beat Andy Reid and the Chiefs certainly at home, right? The only game they lost this year was on the road in Buffalo. They lost the other game when Mahomes wasn't playing.
Here's the thing, and Booger McFarland said it last night after the game, is that golfers had to deal with Tiger Woods. Football players previously had to deal with Tom Brady. You know, women's tennis had to deal with Serena Williams, where you can be unbelievably talented, one of the best in the world, but you will, in the history books, go to a certain level of unnoticed because you had to face someone so much better. And that, at this point, is what Josh Allen is, unfortunately, because he is, the Chiefs aren't going anywhere. They're going to be around, and unfortunately for him, he is in the shadow of Patrick Mahomes, who is, listen, love it or hate it, you have to respect what he's doing. I mean, when was the last time that a team besides a team led by Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes wasn't in the Super Bowl outside of the Joe Burrow, Matt Stafford one? It's been like 9 years, 10 years.
I'm not without empathy for Josh Allen because
I
feel like I was watching him and what he had to be feeling on the sideline because he's like, dude, what else can I do to get to the Super Bowl?
I really do.
I mean, I get it. I can see, understand completely why he's just sitting there thinking, what in the world do I have to do? And of course, it's the Bills, and there's history of that happening in a previous era, so you feel like the jinx is continuing. But we'll see what happens here, because obviously the Eagles look pretty good. The Chiefs are a very slight favorite in the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks, but now we have our matchup, right? Fred, did you watch that?
Oh, I did. Yesterday? I had a couple of thoughts. One was, I was thinking of one of your fill-ins, Joe Beamer, who lives in Buffalo.
Buffalo guy, right.
He's at every Buffalo game.
Yeah.
I was just picturing what was going through his head.
Oh,
other facts that I heard that I don't know if they're true or not, but one was that the Buffalo quarterback,
Josh Allen,
had more roughing the passer calls against him than Mahomes did all this past season. So that's something to consider. And I also think Kansas City scoring 31 was the most points they scored all season.
It may have been, yeah. And one more thing here real quick. You talk about
that's amazing, by the way. That little stat
amazing.
Right there really is.
You talk about the misfortune of the Bills. I saw a stat last night that teams in the playoffs are 85-6 when they score 4 touchdowns and they have no turnovers. 2 of those 6 losses have been the Bills against the Chiefs.
Well, and who did win the turnover battle last night? Because all throughout the playoffs, I think the team that won the turnover battle was the winner.
I think the Bills did. I don't think they had a turnover last night. And the Chiefs had that
either.
Fumble. I think that was the only turnover.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Christian Benford, the loss of him did not help the Bills either. So it's all a bunch of could have, would have, should have. But boy, was that close.
It was close.
And I was pulling for Josh.
There was that wild catch where the Chiefs receiver pulled it out of the hands of the Buffalo defender as they were going down onto the ground.
It's amazing, really. You know, you almost have to wonder. I was thinking about this last night. I don't know if this is where we're going to go because there, you know, if we're being honest, there's a lot of complaints about, you know, there's people out there on Instagram and everywhere else talking about conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. But wouldn't it be possible as we kind of move in, and I don't like to overuse technology, right? But we could have a pretty indication if you put something in the football and you have some sort of, I'm just going to call it a laser line. I don't even know what the technology would
be.
Right. And you say, okay, did that football, because all you got to do is cross the plane for a touchdown. And, you know, when it comes to the first downs, it gets a little hinky-jinky a little bit because you have to see that ball crossed the plane where the first down line is. And what happened with the Bills last night is there seemed to be a bit of a judgment call from two different referees on where the ball should be placed. And then when they took a long look at it, since they had ruled that it wasn't a first down and their video evidence could not necessarily overturn it, it stayed not a first down. If it was opposite, if they had awarded the first down, I think it would have probably stayed a first down, if that makes sense.
People are frustrated about these, you know, what you could argue were poor calls, but it doesn't change the fact that there were multiple opportunities that the Bills had. They could have won this game very easily if they would have game planned against Patrick Mahomes better. And here's the ultimate reality, guys, is that the NFL still, after all of these crazy complaints throughout the years, does not have full-time referees. And that needs to be fixed because, you know, you can complain about these refs and it being aided towards the Chiefs. It's not. Yes, there were a couple moments last night where
there's no full-time. I don't understand your point.
These referees have regular jobs during the week. They are not full. They are not paid like as full time. These are not their full time jobs. Right. They are flown out on weekends.
They probably make more money doing their part time job than they do their full time job. My guess is some of these guys are full time. They may not work every day of the week.
None of them are paid as full time members of the National Football League. And I'm saying that if there was more time put into perhaps making sure that they are, you know, handling these calls correctly, there's always going to be a human element to it. But if they were forced to, you know, have to spend more time making sure that, you know, their craft was perfected or better, maybe we wouldn't have nearly as many of these issues.
But these are guys that make between $200 and $300, maybe even more, $1,000 a year. So I get what you're saying. Maybe they're not considered full-time jobs, but they don't have to work if they don't want to. Some of them might, obviously, because of circumstances. You know, it's weird because then what the players practice during the other days of the week, right? What do the refs do? Sit in school and they look at ref things? I don't know. I understand. Well, you're never going to have a perfect situation. You're always going to have judgment calls. That's why they have so many, you know, angles, and the refs come in, they try to get it right. I think most of the times they get it right, even when they go to video review.
Did you see the goal line stance by the Commanders at the end of the Philadelphia game, where the one defensive lineman jumped over like three times in a row,
so
and they had to like
this.
Fine him?
So what happened was is the Commanders, they were kind of hanging on to hope, right, at the end of the game, and the Eagles were, they do this tush-push, you've seen that, right, where they're right down there on the goal line, and they were trying to, what's interesting is that if you listen to the you know, Tony Romo
this.
In the second game, Tony Romo kind of, I don't know if he did it accidentally or if he was watching the game previously, but he said in the coverage of the Chiefs game, look, in a situation like this, you kind of got to jump the snap count because you got to get in there and try to time it. And what was happening is the Commanders kept trying to time it, and they would just completely jump over the center before the snap. So then it would be, you know, let's say it was 2 feet away from the goal line. Well, it's a penalty half the distance to the goal. So now it's like a foot and a half away. Then they did it again. They did it three times, and I didn't know this, but apparently the refs could have awarded a touchdown. They could have said, look, it's delay of game or whatever the hell it was, and they could have given him a touchdown. They didn't do that in the end. But it was one of those things that was it was taken forever to decide. But there you go. We have our Super Bowl matchup, and we'll certainly talk about it plenty between now and 2 weeks from now.
We need that sounder of the Philadelphia mayor in our ELGSES.
Yeah. Did you put it?
We got to go get that because, you know, now they got a big game coming up, and maybe she'll – I wonder if she's going to give it another shot at some point. If she's going to be able to laugh at herself or she's going to hide from this.
If I were her, I'd try to laugh at myself, right? You got to somehow try
always
to make...
Always the best option.
Right, that is the best option. So we have the audio here of the collective NFL fans who are complaining about the Chiefs. We also have actress Selena Gomez, but she's crying about something else.
I just wanted to say that I'm so sorry. All my people are getting attacked. The children...
Okay, it's hard to understand her here, and I don't want to come off as cold as I sometimes probably can. I'm not without empathy. There are kids, and circumstances are somewhat tough for some of these families. But let's face it, you have criminals that are in our midst that ICE is deporting right now. That actress is all about the kids and the schools. That's fine. However, look, if you didn't come here legally, you still broke the law. I love that people are somehow, Fred, you've pulled some of this audio, they act like Tom Homan's going to say something different. I mean, the game is on now, right? The president told people what he would do. I think one of my favorite cuts here is from Stephen A. Smith, and he was on, where is that? Let's see here. There it is. He's on with Bill Maher on the podcast. I don't think he was on the Max show? Because the podcast is where Bill sits around and smokes weed. I'm guessing it was that one. But here's what he said.
What does it do?
If people don't know who he is. Do you know who Stephen A. Smith is? Very popular ESPN talking head, very opinionated, African-American. So some people say he's kind of sliding over to the Trump side here.
What does it do? The man was impeached twice. He was convicted on 34 felony counts. And the American people still said, he's closer to normal than what we see
exactly.
Left. That's what they're saying. He's closer to normal. Why? Because something that pertains, when you talk about the transgender community, for example, and you're talking about the issues that pertain to less than 1% of the population, the Democratic Party came across as if that was a priority more so than the other issues.
Yeah, thank
what
you.
Voter out there can look at the Democratic Party at this moment in time and say, there's a voice for us,
nobody.
Somebody that speaks for us,
right.
that goes up on Capitol Hill and fights the fights that we want them fighting on our behalf? They didn't do that. And that's why their behinds are home, and that man is back into the White House, and they want to sit up there and talk. You look at the networks right now, they're talking about him. Look at it. This is the latest. Look at him. Here he goes again. Well, you know what here he goes again means? He's doing what he said he was going to do.
Yeah, it's, look, it's not that complicated. For those of us who have, and I said this last week, I got some friends that I thought were going to jump off and get some help for Trump derangement syndrome. They have not. And I don't know what their mental health is going to look like for the next 4 years, but it's kind of fun to watch this. I mean, listen to the reaction here.
Donald Trump's first net approval rating of his second term is higher than his entire first term. And I was interested, has that ever happened? Donald Trump is the only...
I have a really hard time believing this.
This is 100% true.
On a fascism scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being peak fascism, how would you rate Trump's first week?
Yeah, they can't handle it. He's more popular than ever because he's doing what he said he was going to do. This is MSNBC. Got a reporter out there talking about the ICE raids. Listen to the reaction here.
And all of this comes on the backdrop of all of those ICE raids that we've been talking about. I want you guys to take a look at this video that we saw just this morning from the DEA, ATF, and Homeland Security investigators out of the Rocky Mountain Division in Colorado. There you can see a raid that was conducted this morning. They say that they were targeting a Venezuelan gang, and they were able to see cash weapons, and actually made an arrest of, quote,
wait for it here,
illegal aliens right there.
There you go.
Alex?
Yep. We call them undocumented immigrants, but that, again, was in the release from the DEA.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry, progressive audience. We don't call them, you know, illegal aliens. We call them undocumented immigrants. But it was in the release. It was in the news release that our reporter was just forced to read. And we have to virtue signal at the end of the report to indicate that we don't believe in that. I mean, the amount of being out of touch is Hall of Fame level here. They just don't get it. Then there's Margaret Brennan and J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance has really done a good job. Some people have said, well, why does he go on with Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation? She's awful, right, with her bias and her questioning. She is, but J.D. Vance, every time he's on with Margaret Brennan, completely owns her. And I don't think she gets it.
When you talked to us in August, you said, I don't think we should abandon anybody who's been properly vetted and helped us. Do you stand by that?
Well, Margaret, I don't agree that all these immigrants or all these refugees have been properly vetted. In fact, we know that there are cases of people who allegedly were properly vetted and then were literally planning terrorist attacks on our country. That happened during the campaign, if you may remember. So clearly not all of these foreign nationals have been properly vetted.
No, but there are 30,000 people in the pipeline.
Now, you got to listen to her here because she sort of gets very condescending, a little bit under her breath.
Afghan refugees.
But my primary concern as the vice president, Margaret, is to look after the American people. And now that we know that we have vetted problems with a lot of these.
Did you catch that there? She goes, so no.
As the vice president, Margaret, is to look after the American people. And now that we know that we have vetting problems with a lot of these refugee programs, we absolutely cannot unleash thousands of unvetted people into our country.
These people
it's
are
not
vetted.
Good.
These people are vetted.
Okay. Mark, these are vetted people, JD.
Yeah,
they
she
have,
knows.
They
and
have
he
paperwork.
Doesn't.
They use the app. There's no reason you should be booting people in this country. I mean, what is their expectation when literally millions of people cross the border? You know what hasn't been discussed at all in the last month when it comes to immigration? Fred, remember when Bill Malusian, this probably goes back maybe a year and a half, but certainly last year, Bill Malusian would show lines of Chinese nationals and other men, only men, single file lines, long, trying to cross in this country because they knew that they could game the system, right? We don't want those people in our country. We don't. That's different from the people picking the crops, because I know you want to put everyone in the same category. Who is going to pick our crops? Who's going to clean our hotel rooms? Nobody can do it, because that's an insult. It's just like they insult African Americans. That would be an insult to Hispanics that are here in this country trying to do things the right way, working hard, becoming part of our culture. I'd be pissed off if people were saying that. So then Brennan goes on here because she goes, oh, they weren't vetted.
Just like the guy who planned a terrorist attack in Oklahoma a few months ago, he was allegedly properly vetted. And many people in the media and the Democratic Party said that he was properly vetted. Clearly he wasn't. I don't want my children to share a neighborhood with people who are not properly vetted. And because I don't want it for my kids, I'm not going to force any other American citizens' kids to do that either.
No, and that was a very particular case. It wasn't clear if he was radicalized when he got here or while he was living here.
I don't really care, Margaret. Yeah, I don't want that person in my country, and I think most Americans agree with me.
So that's her job. Margaret Brennan's job is to come up with these random things that clearly aren't even factual and try to interview the current vice president of the United States. Let me just ask this question, okay? When was there one moment in the last 4 years with Joe Biden or Kamala Harris where a member of the legacy media treated them like that? Ask
Never.
Questions along those lines. I could have a little bit more respect. That was so condescending, and J.D. Vance completely owned her.
Yeah.
But where's there been an example of Margaret Brennan interjecting her own opinion when it comes to Kamala Harris? Look, she was one of the debate moderators. It's utterly embarrassing. But here's the thing. You got Stephen A. Smith and others that are common sense people. I don't agree with everything he says. He pulls the race card too. But they see the writing on the wall.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
A lot of stuff going on here on a Monday afternoon, including Sue's News for the 4 o'clock. I got a couple of things I want to throw in from the weekend as well. I can share some grandbaby stories, Sue.
Yay!
One of the issues I had this morning is I kind of jacked my back a little bit, and I couldn't hold Idris, who's, by the way, huge. He's like 18 pounds now and really, really big. This is my son in from Houston for a week, so we had a great time over the weekend. Kusumano will weigh in on the Chiefs and the Eagles, Mizzou basketball, SLU basketball, the Blues, and the Cardinals treading water. All of that at 4:45. You know, we had a new governor that was sworn in last week. We have a new lieutenant governor as well. David Wasinger is with us this afternoon. He is leading a Republican charge to eliminate some DEI stuff here in Missouri. And the new lieutenant governor, let's welcome him to the show this afternoon. Hi, David. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. I'm doing great. My wife says hello to her favorite high school classmate. So good. How are you doing? It sounds like you and your family are doing well.
We're doing great. Yeah, Colleen went to Parkway West, and she is a former member of the St. Louis County Council, and now you're the lieutenant governor, and we haven't really spoken with you in the last several months. You won that primary, so it was kind of a no-brainer that you were going to win, but let's kind of focus on that and why you decided to get in on this race, David.
You know, we've got young children too, Mark, and we didn't like the direction of the state and the country. We ran to, as President Trump did, shake things up in Washington, D.C. I ran to shake things up in Jefferson City. Now your Missourians, our message resonated with them. We ran as an outsider to shake things up. We won, and the voters of Missouri have spoken. So we're looking to make big changes in Jefferson City.
Is there an opportunity? Look, let's be honest. Sometimes the lieutenant governor's role is a little undefined. People don't know what you do. Is it just something where you go to some ribbon cuttings and things like that? But there seems to be an indication in the early days of David Wasinger and him being lieutenant governor that you're going to change some things here in this office.
Yeah, Mark, you have a real opportunity. You have a huge bully platform. You know, you were kind enough to have me on your show this afternoon. You preside over the state Senate, so you control the gavel. And as I'm learning, that gavel, you frankly have a little bit more power than most people think as serving as president of the Senate. So we hope to move some big conservative legislation across the finish line this term. And then we're also fighting some issues such as the DEI that you referenced. So we're working with other Republicans, including Attorney General Andrew Bailey, our U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt, and our great state treasurer Vivek Malik to fight back on some of these DEI issues.
So John Seiler is going to be with me a little later. John is great. He's really a hero in some of the stuff. He's been, really exposing it for the last 3 years, I'd say, maybe even more. He's a researcher currently at the National Association of Scholars. But he wrote a piece that's even in today, it might have been yesterday's Wall Street Journal, on DEI. And, I've covered this extensively. You still have people out there that really, they think diversity, equity, and inclusion. Even Wesley Bell. Did you see Wesley Bell's tweet from last week by any chance, David?
I did not.
Let me. It's pretty simple. Let me just kind of, you know, summarize. Here's all he says. He goes, what part of hashtag DEI does Trump have an issue with? Diversity, equity, or the idea of inclusion? Asking for a friend, actually a lot of friends. My response to that was, you don't understand a word of what you're talking about, Wesley. But I thought people said that he's kind of smart, but that's not what DEI is all about. You know that, David Wasinger. And what I said is that we get that a lot of your constituents are lazy and they don't want to work and they're counting on preferences to help them be lazy and not want to work. But there's the rest of us, black, white, and other, that we'd like to work. We'd like merit to be a part of the equation. And that's what's not been happening in many government offices and in academia across the country. And business,
you know,
corporate.
DEI in many of my people's eyes did not earn it, or division, exclusion, and indoctrination, I think is what it stands for, as opposed to diversity, equity, inclusion. So did not earn it. It comes up big. So we're opposed to it. And we just called out the Missouri Supreme Court for mandating attorneys in the state of Missouri go through this woke indoctrination for continuing legal education training. We're cautiously optimistic the Missouri Supreme Court will repeal that rule. And frankly, we need to get it out of the state government throughout the state of Missouri.
So that is something, by petitioning the Supreme Court, it's something that they could actually act upon?
They could. They could meet. There are seven Supreme Court judges in Missouri. I think the brainchild behind this continuing legal education is no longer on the court. So I'm cautiously optimistic the Supreme Court we'll take some action and repeal this mandatory training that attorneys have to engage in on diversity, equity, and inclusion and cultural competence. And if they don't, Nick Schroer, our state senator from St. Charles, has filed legislation that the Missouri Supreme Court cannot mandate that type of training in Missouri.
The new lieutenant governor of Missouri, David Wasinger, is on the phone with us. And before I let you go, outside of the DEI, which I completely support, what are there other goals that you're staying right now for this office moving forward, David?
There really are, Mark. There are a lot of this is that we fight for veterans. We're going to try to fight, you know, make our veterans more important than illegals. That's been the case in Missouri for the last few years. So we want to put them on the pedestal. We fight for tourism. So we want to, you know, get this crime under control in St. Louis and other places so people feel welcome in coming to the state of Missouri. And then we're also responsible for advocating for seniors. So we've got a lot on our plate right now, and including serving as president of the Senate during this legislative term. So we invite your listeners to come to the Missouri Lieutenant Governor office to visit. We'd love to have them. And that would include you, Mark. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Well, you know what? I should try to get up there. I'm actually heading into Columbia in a few weeks. And I was just thinking, as you were speaking, that maybe I could zip into Jeff City and then head over to the J School. And I'm going to a basketball game that night. So that's something I will certainly consider. On the topic of crime, let's just address that real quickly, because we talk about that on the show all the time. As you know, you know this region. You care about this region. It seems like some of the elected officials in, well, maybe all of them in St. Louis City and County, they don't really seem to want to focus on that still. And I don't know what the holdup is.
You know, it really has to be a focus of St. Louis, because it bleeds into everything in terms of economic development, tourism. You know, attending a Canesville Cardinal game, people are scared to go to the St. Louis Cardinal game because of the crime issue. It really has to be front and center. I met with Andrew Bailey today, and I told him one of the most significant things that happened in Missouri was his serving as attorney general and, you know, getting rid of Kim Gardner. So it's all about people. Getting the right people in place. I think we've got a new prosecuting attorney at St. Louis County that's going to be very, very good. So there's a lot of good things happening in St. Louis. We just need to get the right people in place and get the right policies in place to follow. So I'm cautiously optimistic this ship is going to turn around.
Awesome. Well, listen, enjoy settling into the new role. Keep us posted on everything, including on the DEI front, because that's something that we do talk about a lot on the show. My best to Colleen. Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Mark. All right. If you're over for the Mizzou game, swing by the office.
Absolutely. I will consider that. That'd be fun. I haven't been, you know, I was talking about this with Fred last week, I think off the air soon. I used to go, the Immigration Group Fair used to have us all out in Washington, D.C. for a broadcast. Mark Cox has done this as well. And I always liked it as an opportunity to not only do the broadcast from D.C., but to get up on Capitol Hill and to, you know, to
just see what's going
get
on.
My hands dirty and see what's really going on and talk to real people. And one thing I would say about, I love D.C. Have you been there much?
Not much.
It's an interesting place to me, and there's all the, you know, museums and everything, and I know my way a little bit around D.C., so I've had fun even though I haven't been there in a while. I used to go at least once a year. But Jeff City is a weird place.
Yeah.
It's just, there's just this, I don't know what it is. I've been around it for a long time. You know, I lived in Columbia from 83 to 97, so I would have to cover stories in Jeff City, was up there for inaugurations and things, but it's just a weird place. And all these folks that are arguing about all these issues, they tend to get together at the same bars and hang out. So it's a little sleazy is what I would say, perhaps.
Interesting.
But maybe I should get up there and assess some of the things. Now, let me get back to DEI here. There was a great, great column. I'm going to see if I can get Ryan Zickrath on the air. He writes for an outlet called Unheard. And I think this is helpful when it comes to understanding what DEI really is, because let's face it, Wesley Bell has no comprehension. And I think he has to know. And he's just lying because he can't be that dumb, right?
I would assume.
I would assume. So let me go back to his tweet where he, you know, tries to mislead people here. It says, what part of DEI does Trump have an issue with? Diversity, equity, or the idea of inclusion? Asking for a friend. Actually, a lot of friends. Okay. That means black people, right? That's what he means. So here's what Adam wrote. The buzzy, I haven't watched this show Severance. Have you seen this on Apple TV Plus?
No.
It's kind of weird. People say, it's one of those shows that people say they love, and I'm not even convinced that they do. I tried to watch it. You know, it's got this like cool factor, if you will, you get it, if you're in the club. But Ryan starts his piece on DEI talking about Severance because apparently, and I have watched one episode, it depicts a group of office drones trapped in this cubicle hell called Lumon Industries. And he describes it as a workplace drama, which suspiciously little is revealed about the actual work done by Mark Scout, who is played by Adam Scott. He's the protagonist in the show. It appears to be a Sisyphean task of sorting random numbers, but we have no idea why, and neither do they. Do any of these people hunched over screens do anything of use? So he brings up Severance because he says, and I think you got to think hard about this, and maybe we have some friends who are in this cottage industry. Many of us have wondered the same thing about the tens of thousands of consultants and paper pushers embedded in America's, quote, diversity, equity, and inclusion complex. And rest assured, this is a complex. This is a cottage industry. You got a lot of people out there. One of the things that I'd love to go back and do, and Sue, maybe we'll have time to do this, let's go back to the audit of the St. Louis Public Schools, and let's find out how much of that money that they wasted was on this. And a lot of it was. Look, you have people that are put into these positions. One of the things that's happening in some branches of government, maybe even in corporate America, is they're taking the DEI people and they're giving them other titles. They're changing their titles to make it look like they actually do something, even though they don't do anything. So what Ryan says is, according to the data compiled by a research firm called Cora Signal, 43,000 people in this country were employed in DEI-related roles last year. 43,000 is up from 35,000 in 2022. That means, here's an interesting figure, America is on track to have more DEI specialists than commercial airline pilots in the coming years.
Oh, my gosh.
But he raises that analogy because, let's face it, we know what pilots do, right? We know what they do. They fly planes.
Sure.
Well, what do these people do? What are the DEI experts at these universities?
That is a really good question.
Because they don't do anything. All right. So What he says here is last week, President Trump issued his own severance of sorts. On January 22nd, federal DEI employees were placed on paid administrative leave effective immediately. As a result, many are being flung back into the private economy at an inopportune time. DEI initiatives had already been hemorrhaging support in the C-suite and among rank-and-file workers over the past 2 years. The private sector might soon be as just a much of DEI dead end as the government. And that's what we're hoping for. Now, he says, I don't want to sound flippant about mass layoffs. I could maybe put myself in that category, too. Losing your job sucks. I've been there a couple of different times, right? And, you know, getting out of DEI from the government is a mission Team Trump has taken up with a lot of zeal. It may cut too deeply, he says. He says Trump's decree also revoked the 1965 Lyndon B. Johnson order that created the EEOC. The EEOC was tasked with preventing unlawful job discrimination without regard to race, color, religion, or national origin. We're going to separate these two things out when it comes to the EEOC. He's saying that, that's something that might be a little problematic when it comes to, you know, the courts, and we'll have to see where that works out. But he says DEI, you know, to give a little history here, and John can do this, John Silent, when he joins us in a couple hours. This was relatively just completely invented out of thin air by this enlightened group of liberals in the white collar world after George Floyd, right? So after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, there was this moment where everyone had to say, what can I do to stop racism? It's like anti-racism. You know, you have these white women that go out there, forget the names at this point, and they host these dinners of white suburban women in like Webster Groves. That's actually their cottage industry. Webster Groves, Missouri. All of the do-gooders and the virtue signalers there, right? And they have dinner with them and they have to expose how guilty they feel about being racist all these years. Even though their behavior might not indicate that, it doesn't matter. They're white. The skin tone indicates they are evil and they have to come to terms with their evilness. Their evilness is they're white, all right? So people had to ask this question. So then you had, as Ryan indicated, the lanyard class in boardrooms, college campuses, non-governmental organizations all over the country responded. Let me give you another example here. Because remember the little old lady at the MS Society that kind of didn't understand what she, her meant? If you missed this story, there was an older woman. She might have even been in her 80s. She was a volunteer. She had worked with the MS Society for a long, long decades, right? Well, a little snowflake at the MS Society in the national office was taken aback because the poor woman literally did not understand why pronouns were necessary. She was confused, mainly because it's an idiotic idea and it's virtue signaling, right? So she didn't get it. She was actually told that her role was going to end.
And she was a longtime volunteer.
Yes. Now, that was corrected because of people like John Seiler. And I would say even people like me, I'm not taking total credit, but people like me all across the country, people in media, in conservative media, jumped on this. They asked the question of the MS Society, what in God's name are you thinking, right? But that's the kind of stuff that's gone on. And people have been, good people have been taken out by this nonsense, right? So the only thing that we knew how to do to fix this is to create, as Mr. Zikraf refers to, as new bull, you know what, jobs, new BS jobs. And apparently this is, I didn't know that the phrase BS jobs, the full, you know, the full BS part, was used to describe in 2018 the rebirth of medieval feudalism in the modern corporate world. That sounds complicated, right? I didn't know it was just around from 2018. I guess they say with the same tendency to create endless hierarchies of lords, vassals, and retainers, BS jobs are the polar opposite of blank jobs. Those are disproportionately blue-collar, paid by the hour, performed by the serfs, if you will. The BS jobs tend to be held by the college-educated lords. Their salary, to see the difference here, sometimes generously. We don't know what they do. They're a form of paid employment, so completely pointless, unnecessary, or pernicious that even the employee cannot justify the existence. I think that's pretty accurate. So the longer your job title is, the harder it is to explain what the hell you do to a stranger, right? The greater chance that your job is superfluous. So it goes with DEI experts hired to enrich the workplace with diversity and equity. The latter is a fuzzy term that even Bernie Sanders threw up his hands when asked to define. So this guy addresses the complicated issue of exactly how full of blank are the DEI jobs. And he says that they're put into five categories: flunkies, goons, duct tapers, box tickers, and taskmasters. DEI jobs could fit all five conceivably. So flunkies, workers whose purpose is to make their superiors feel important. I think we all know those. Goons, those who deceive others on behalf of their employers. Since the rise of DEI, executives grilled about their anti-racism initiatives by the media can simply gesture vaguely at their middle management DEI flunkies and walk away. Nick says the goons are the ones mystifying what they do via the dark arts of public relations. Brands could wallpaper over bad behavior like union busting by appearing to be taking a stand for social justice, even if they weren't quite sure what that meant or what came next after all that. Now, he offers an example, but let's think about Bud Light and what happened to them with the virtue signaling. This may be happening to Jaguar right now. It's not a good look in corporate America. It's backfiring, and the people who buy the products are saying, wait a second, this is unnecessary. So he says, this guy who wrote this piece in Unheard says he was a former goon. So in 2022, he says he did some contract work for a small ad agency hired to do DEI anti-racist campaigns, right? So the company was held by a black woman who outsourced much of the creative work to freelancers like this dude. So he says that there was something bitterly ironic about being a straight white guy whose job was to design woke social media posts for Pfizer and other clients, for example, big corporate clients, about the importance of celebrating Juneteenth, right? That's a national holiday now. But that job was the kind of grift that helps disguise the fact that the whole DEI world is smoke and mirrors. And he says the same goes for those considered tickers, those who create the appearance that something is useful that is being done when it's really not. Will your company unionize or provide your employees with better health care? No, but how about promoting a queer BIPOC awareness day, right? And he even says when he was a reporter, he was down in Atlanta, and he said he was puzzled by the fact in 2023 that the public school district down there was spending $3.5 million a year on DEI. This is why I mentioned SLPS in this audit. I'm going to go back and try to cross-reference this. If your student population is 72% black, okay, 72% black, what does it mean to diversify it? Were white and Asian children underrepresented?
Good,
yeah, right.
Really good question.
So he asked that question. He starts poking around saying, wait a second, what are we diversifying here? No one could tell him. Additionally, three quarters of Atlantic public school students couldn't even read at grade level. But why teach the kids how to read when you can uplift indigenous voices, Sue? That's what education has become. It's embarrassing, and it's going to stop. And for those of you who are do-gooder teachers, or if you're the new superintendent in Webster Public Schools, I think you've been put on notice a little bit here. We'll see. He says the taskmasters are the BS job artists who create extra work for those who don't need it. And that's what DEI seems to do best. For 4 years, white-collar office workers have endured the same self-serious seminars on pronouns and unconscious bias and have had to pretend to care about self-congratulatory awareness days with social justice-y slogans. Yes, we have. We're going to sit here and we're going to watch the mayor of St. Louis, or maybe it'll be a new mayor, hoist the LGBTQ flag. They put it in front of the war memorial, right? They're going to virtue signal as much as they can. It's not helping people in St. Louis who can't get their trash picked up, who can't get a police officer, a 911 call that is answered. But you know what? We've all undergone our anti-racist training. We have to do that here at this company. It's sorry, but what does it actually achieve? All it does is it makes corporate America check off the box. Does it make us all more anti-racist, whatever that means? No, but we have to take the test. We have to see the pronouns, all of this nonsense. You know, there was somebody, I won't mention the name, there was somebody that I followed on, well, I can't do this now. I'm looking at the clock, Sue. I'm in trouble. I think I'm in trouble here. So I was going to tell a DEI story locally. I'll have to do that after the break. We're coming back. We got Sue's News in the next hour. Let me close the DEI loop. One of the things I was going to offer an example of, I follow someone on Facebook who I think works, I know they work at a library. I'm not sure if it's St. Louis County Public or St. Charles County Library, but let me offer this as an example. So last week, I guess, and I might be a little uncomfortable with this. Last week, there was some move by one of these boards to say, you're now prevented as a library worker to use pronouns in your emails, right?
Mm.
I don't know if we need to go that far or we need to ban those, but here's what I don't support. Forcing employees to use pronouns.
Right.
That's a bunch of nonsense. If you want to be silly and use she, her, they, them, whatever you want to do.
Have at it.
Yeah, go for it, right? I don't think we need to be, you know, passing policies that prevent that nonsense if you really want to do it. But I think the reason I bring it up is because, look, there's a lot of pushback on all this right now. And one of the things that Nick Zitcraft wrote in Unheard is he said, corporate America, we've been addressing government here. Corporate America has been cutting out all these BS jobs recently because of consolidation. So they're getting rid of a lot of the DEI folks because now it's convenient to do that. But will there be demand for Robin DiAngelo and White Fragility and the support groups, the anti-racist support groups, right? Will that happen in the future? I think that the good news is, and John Seiler is going to kind of address some of this as we get to the 5 o'clock hour. He's got a new piece in the Wall Street Journal. The good news is, yeah, I think now for those of us who didn't want to use pronouns and weren't going to, you know, worship at the altar of anti-racism, we're happy that maybe this stuff is not going to be hoisted upon us anymore. We got Sue's News coming up in the next hour.
Get more at 971talk.com.